You are listening to another exclusive podcast from Pituitary World News. This podcast by Dr. Lewis Blevins is the third in our series on Cushing's, specifically on recurring or residual Cushing's disease, and it focuses on the medical management of Cushing's. The Pituitary World News podcast series on Cushing's is made possible in part by a generous contribution from Corcept Therapeutics. I wanted to start the podcast perhaps on a bit of a personal note. I was not touched personally by Cushing's. As you know, I was diagnosed with acromegaly. But I find Cushing's fascinating due to its complexity and the way it affects people. As we all know, pituitary disorders in general are very similar in that they are all extremely difficult to diagnose, and symptoms and signs sometimes are not recognized immediately. So for many people, regardless of their condition, sometimes take a very long time to diagnose and get a correct diagnosis and therefore correct treatment. Today's topic is the medication mifepristone or Korlym to treat symptoms and signs of Cushing's. Welcome, Dr. Blevins, to today's podcast.
Thank you, Jorge. It's a pleasure to chat about Cushing's disease as usual, and in particular the drug mifepristone or Korlym, which can be used to treat patients with residual or recurrent disease to control symptoms of hypercortisolism.
So why don't we start with an explanation of what this drug is?
This is a drug that is a glucocorticoid receptor antagonist. And basically what it does is blocks the glucocorticoid receptor. So it fits in the category of receptor blockers, just like beta blockers block the beta receptors that are involved in the sympathetic nervous system. Angiotensin II receptor blockers block the angiotensin II receptor, for example. But this drug actually binds to and blocks the action of the glucocorticoid receptor that acts within the nucleus of our cells.
How long has this drug been around and used in patients with Cushing's syndrome?
Well, this drug's actually been around a very long time. I first heard about it when I was in my training in the early 1990s at Johns Hopkins, and there was a study going on at the NIH using this particular medication, at the time known as RU486, to treat patients with very severe clinical manifestations of hypercortisolism. A lot of the early literature focused on the use of the drug to treat severe psychosis with Cushing's in those patients who were very, very ill with sepsis and all sorts of other complications of hypercortisolism. This drug also blocks the progesterone receptor, and it's known as the abortion pill, if you will, because it can be used to terminate early pregnancy. That, in fact, led to a lot of mystique about this particular medication, and really and truly, there weren't any good clinical trials done to assess the use of this drug for decades. Until earlier last decade, Corcept Therapeutics resurrected this drug and designed some appropriate clinical trials to evaluate it in patients with Cushing's disease, submitted their research findings to the FDA, and now the drug is approved by the FDA to treat patients with Cushing's and is marketed under the name Korlym. It does have an orphan drug designation.
You mentioned it can be used in Cushing's. How do you mean? What are the indications for therapy?
That's a very good question. And based on the research results, this drug has been approved by the FDA to treat the hyperglycemia associated with endogenous Cushing's disease in adult patients with hypercortisolism who are not candidates for or responsive to surgery.
Well, that seems fairly narrow, or I should say restrictive. Is that how it's been used?
Well, truthfully, that is the approved indication to use this drug to treat hyperglycemia in patients with Cushing's disease. But I do know physicians who utilize this medication in patients with severe hypercortisolism and the attendant manifestations thereof, regardless of whether the patient has diabetes mellitus, impaired glucose tolerance, or even normoglycemia.
So how does it help with diabetes and hypoglycemia in those patients with Cushing's?
Jorge, that's an excellent question. Glucocorticoid hormones are hormones that bind to the glucocorticoid receptor and initiate a number of different things in the cells. One of the reasons they're called glucocorticoids is they increase blood sugar. And they do so by breaking down proteins and producing amino acids that can then be used by the liver to make glucose. They break down glycogen, and in the end, you end up with increased hepatic glucose output. But you also have insulin resistance because of some effects on tissues. And those two major pathways lead to the hyperglycemia, and they make glucose available as fuel to the body. Remember, glucocorticoid hormones are stress hormones, and naturally, we want to increase glucose levels to have energy available to fight stress. But in the setting of Cushing's disease, patients have high blood sugars that leads to complications as a consequence thereof. So with this drug binding to the glucocorticoid receptor, it blocks those actions of glucocorticoids that increase blood glucose and actually lowers blood glucose and improves hemoglobin A1C levels. Insulin resistance has been shown to improve as well.
Wow, that's fascinating. Are there any other clinical benefits that have been demonstrated using this medication?
Well, yes, indeed. The research looked at what was called the global clinical response, and they evaluated a number of different parameters and also photographs of patients and quality of life questionnaires, for example. And what they found during the study, or at least a couple of studies now, I guess, is that these things improve in about 87% of patients. And they include things not only like the glucose, but also blood pressure. The need for antihypertensive medications is diminished. Lipid profile improves. Body composition changes to be more appropriate and less Cushingoid. Strength improves. Psychological factors also improve with treatment. And quality of life has been shown to improve as well.
Well, it certainly sounds like many of the clinical features are going to improve. And I'm certain that patients who are affected would enjoy those benefits of treatment. So what about the weight loss?
Well, good question. I don't have the study in front of me, but I believe that patients had an 8 to 10% decline in body weight during one particular study.
How long do you have to treat patients with this drug before you know if it works? I know in some of the acromegaly drugs, it takes a while to know if treatment is going to be effective.
That's another great question, Jorge. Most of the studies were really looking at short-term effects of treatment. Some studies have extended beyond the original period of study, and patients have been treated for over a year. But I believe that most of the time you sort of see there's a response or not by week 24 of therapy. And some of the things that predict a patient's responding is if you see the diastolic blood pressure falling or if the weight falls, if their blood glucose levels start to fall or they have a diminished need for diabetes medicines or blood pressure medicines. And, of course, patients will notice an improvement in their appearance.
This sounds like a tremendous drug, and I want to learn more about how this drug might actually be used in the clinical setting.
Well, we covered the indication already, but generally I see patients as potential candidates for this therapy if they have residual or recurrent Cushing's. That's been the subject of this series of podcasts. So certainly those patients are candidates for treatment, and also those who are too sick to undergo pituitary surgery or adrenal surgery. I think this drug certainly should be considered in patients before they go to bilateral adrenalectomy. But there's a lot going on there making that decision, but certainly this drug might sort of keep a patient from going to adrenalectomy while you're waiting for radiotherapy to work on the pituitary tumor, for example. It may be used to sort of get patients healthier so that they can then undergo successful pituitary or adrenal surgery. It might be used to treat the hyperglycemia and decrease the overall risk of surgery. It can be used in patients with adrenal cancer, in my view. Whether it's going to be used in patients with subclinical adrenal adenomas remains to be seen.
So how do you prescribe this medication?
Generally, patients start with 300 milligrams daily and can increase the dose up to a maximum of about 1,200 milligrams daily. I think I read somewhere that about 50% of the people in the study required the maximum dose. This is a drug where you titrate according to clinical symptoms and signs, and you want to see improvement in the hypercortisolism to know that you've appropriately blocked the glucocorticoid receptor. It's important for patients to understand that there's not a lab test that we can do to determine whether or not they're on an appropriate dose of medication. It's good old-fashioned clinical medicine based on a history and a physical examination to determine whether or not a patient is on too little or too much medication.
Okay, this is really interesting, and as all things pituitary, sounds complicated. You covered the beneficial aspects of the drug. How about the adverse events, or how do you know you're on too much medication?
Excellent question, Jorge. The first thing we look for are symptoms of adrenocortical insufficiency, such as weakness, fatigue, decreased energy, nausea, vomiting, weight loss, loss of appetite, for example, dizziness on standing, arthralgias, myalgias, etc. The problem is that many of those symptoms are consistent with what we refer to as steroid withdrawal, which is the body certainly getting used to less of a glucocorticoid effect, whether a patient has successful surgery, is coming down on a high dose of steroids, or taking this medication. And it's difficult to ascertain whether a patient actually has adrenal insufficiency or simply steroid withdrawal. So it requires history and physical examination to make that determination, and sometimes you have to hedge your bets. If we believe a patient has adrenal insufficiency, we treat with high doses of dexamethasone to sort of ameliorate the effects of the drug and obviously discontinue the medication as well.
Are there any other concerns with this medication?
One other concern is the fact that this drug blocks the progesterone receptor. Now, patients with hypercortisolism and Cushing's, women in particular, are anovulatory usually and can develop endometrial hyperplasia. That's part of having Cushing's disease or Cushing's syndrome. And this drug blocking the progesterone receptor can lead to endometrial hyperplasia and also some what we call breakthrough bleeding. And patients can have uterine bleeding that can ultimately require D&C to try to control it. I would add here that this drug is contraindicated in pregnancy because of the fact that it blocks the progesterone receptor, because that would cause fetal wastage, pregnancy loss, whatever term you want to use. Another minor to moderate concern is that this drug can cause hypokalemia in patients. That in itself can be easily remedied.
So what about the risk for Nelson's syndrome? Can this be seen in this situation using this medication?
Jorge, that's an excellent question. Nelson syndrome, as you know, is a situation where if you take the adrenal glands out in a patient that has a pituitary tumor, the lack of the negative feedback of the high levels of cortisol on the pituitary tumor will then cause that pituitary tumor to increase in size. And obviously, if you're using a drug to block the glucocorticoid receptors, the concern would be that you might see then a subsequent growth, if you will, or progression in growth, or a new rapid growth in a pituitary tumor. And the studies have addressed this, and while they need longer-term studies, the short-term studies suggest that it's not a problem. There are a number of patients who've been treated with this drug whose tumors did increase in size, but those patients seem to have aggressive tumors. Other patients had tumors that diminished in size, probably due to a prior radiation effect, and some tumors stayed the same. And I think that the noise that we're seeing there with the few patients that grew and the few that decreased is just the natural biology of the treated disease state. They have studied ACTH levels and find that they do increase in some of these patients, and that correlates with an increased urine-free cortisol, and this is due to the lack of the negative feedback. But of course, the urine or the cortisol levels that are increased, as reflected by the urine cortisol, are blocked by the drug, so that's sort of an impertinent laboratory issue, and one of the reasons that we don't check lab studies treating patients with this particular drug. In summary then, we don't see Nelson syndrome with this drug, but it's something that I believe needs to be studied in patients who are treated for longer than, say, 2 to 3 years with this medication before we'd have a true answer to that question. Clearly, patients treated with this drug should have regular MRI studies to evaluate the status of their residual pituitary tumor.
This is so interesting. Like in so many other illnesses, and for that matter, in anything that we do, as time goes by, you learn more and more. So a new drug comes along, and simply we know more about it through post-marketing studies and subsequent reports and analysis and during the initial trials. And I suppose this will be true for this drug as well.
That's absolutely right on target. I think this is a tremendous drug to add to the armamentarium of our therapy for patients with hypercortisolism due to residual and recurrent Cushing's disease. And just as you say, with any particular therapy, we need to continue to follow and assess and gain as much information over time as is possible from real-world usage, which is very different from clinical trials usage.
As usual, Dr. Blevins, this has been a most informative session. I'm sure our audience will appreciate this opportunity to hear your thoughts on this particular drug.
Once again, Jorge, thank you. It was great to chat with you about this particular topic.
Thank you, Dr. Blevins. Great talking to you as usual. I thoroughly enjoy it and learn and provide some very valuable information for our audience. You have been listening to an exclusive podcast from Pituitary World News.